for WGTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. This coming Tuesday, the PBS series American Experience is going to be airing yet another outstanding and illuminating documentary. And this one about perhaps the most famous feud in American history, the feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys. Two families in Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, in that part of Appalachia, and it was a feud that took the whole country by storm, in a sense. That is, there were people all around the country, not just in that part of America, who were caught up in this story as it became ever more violent. And part of the story of this fascinating documentary called The Feud is about the way this feud was perceived by those from the outside. But it is also a very careful chronicle of how this feud erupted in the first place and the kind of violence that was ultimately part of it. And the story in this documentary is also about widespread displacement, both literal and maybe more figurative, in terms of this part of the country and how it was utterly transformed and not necessarily for the better by the rise of industrialization. It's a very carefully, thoroughly told story. And my guest for this portion of the morning show, Randall McLowry, is the director, writer, and co-producer of this film. His credits for American Experience include a film about the history of the Everglades called The Swamp. He had a hand in the fine film The Battle of Chosin, which documented a very important moment in the Korean War. We did a morning show about that documentary. And also a film called The Mine Wars, which actually concerns coal miners of this part of the country and the effort to unionize coal miners. Again, this current film, airing next week, is called The Feud. And Randall McLowry, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being with you.
Could I ask you, before we begin talking about your film, how you got interested in the work of documentary filmmaking? Did you have a particularly interesting path towards this professional life that you are now enjoying?
I to some degree, I sort of fell into documentary filmmaking after studying film at college. I went to New York and anticipated that I would be, you know, doing narrative films, and ended up getting involved with doing some documentary work and found that it was quite fascinating and really sort of the opportunity to really engage and to do really thorough research into particular topics and then finding out ways to visualize them through archival material to be quite quite compelling. And I actually started as an editor and worked my way up through that side of the production process, and was fortunate to work with a lot of very influential people, and they really sort of shaped my thinking about documentary filmmaking, and then moved on into becoming, you know, producing and directing and writing and so on. And I actually was involved with a program that dealt with the feud and also the Mine Wars earlier in my career when I was an editor, where I was working on a history of West Virginia, and both these stories are connected to West Virginia. And so I think it's really kind of the opportunity to revisit some of these stories, which were part of a bigger story in a more full way, I think has been quite gratifying and also illuminating in terms of seeing how you can, you know, revisit the stories and find new material, especially archival material, to help tell them.
Right. By the way, is this a part of the country that is of special interest to you and for any particular reason? I mean, for instance, are you originally from this part of the country or do you have certain personal connections to it? Why have you been drawn to it more than once as a documentarian?
Well, I think I was brought into the story through working on this project about the history of West Virginia, which actually ended up being 2.5 years to work on that. It was a 6.5-hour, 4-part series about that. And so that was my real introduction to that part of the country. And so I actually stayed in West Virginia probably for about 5 or 6 years in total. And I really did quite fall in love with the state and fall in love with the area. It's quite beautiful. And the history itself is quite fascinating and actually sort of representative of a lot of bigger stories that take place in America. And the executive producer of American Experience, Mark Samuels, was the producer director of that History of West Virginia series. And so I think both of these projects about the mine wars and the Hatfield-McCoy feud were things that I know he was very involved with wanting to revisit and was flattered and pleased that we were able to work together on revisiting these stories. And I'm not originally from the area. I'm actually from the D.C. area, so not too far from it, but that's my real introduction into understanding and being part of understanding the Appalachian experience.
Right, and of course, one of the themes of your really interesting film is how this part of the country and its people were misunderstood then and probably to a large extent are misunderstood to this very day, and we'll talk about that in a moment. One other overarching question, if you don't mind. I'm really interested to know, and we probably can't get into this in too much detail, but I'm fascinated to know a little more about what it means to be the director and the producer and the writer of a documentary film. I think for most of us who just watch and enjoy documentary films, those terms mean next to nothing, and in our minds, just from the outside looking in, would seem to be completely interchangeable. And I suspect that they're not. That we wouldn't be specifically calling you the writer and the director, or the producer or one of the producers of this film, unless those weren't, at least to some extent, distinct roles. Can you just illuminate us a little bit on what it means to bear those three different responsibilities for a film like The Feud?
Sure. So in terms of, I think it's sometimes in documentaries there is sort of a blending of those roles for a single individual. But in terms of the producing side of it is really kind of the overarching organization and logistics and, you know, sort of the process of actually getting the film made from, you know, the beginning, from researching it through all the way through the post-production process and delivering it to the commissioning agent. So, and I worked with this on this project with Rebecca Taylor, who's produced, I produced with on previous films, and she has, you know, really has taken on, she does a lot of that responsibility, and it's a shared responsibility in terms of really research, which is involved with researching and producing and then the post-production of the project. And then in terms of directing and writing, the directing side of things are really is thinking about how to take the visuals that are available and what visuals might need to be filmed in addition to it. For example, in The Feud, when you get a chance to see it, you'll see that there are, you know, scenics or images of the area and some sort of recreations and that kind of thing. You know, the director is really the one who's guiding and shaping the vision of the film. And that's, you know, I've worked in different situations where I'm not the writer, I'm working with another writer. And so the writer is really the one who takes the building blocks of the pieces of telling the story. And a large part of that is the interviews, which the director is the one that oversees the actual interviews. And so that content is then, in essence, created through directing the film. But then you have to sort of take all of that content and then start working with it and finding the story within it and finding the elements that are going to tell the story you want to tell within the interviews. And then the narration that goes along with it incorporates all the research that we're doing in terms of from primary resources where you're going to, you know, embed a quote into the storytelling, whether it be from a letter or from a newspaper or whatever sort of, you know, piece of documentation we've uncovered from that time period to help, you know, bring you closer to the characters, bring you closer to the events, and to hopefully bring alive the story. So it's, you know, it's something that I've worked in all capacities where, you know, I've just done, you know, a single, you know, role in that. And this on this project, I happen to have been involved with all three of those roles.
We're speaking with Randall McLowry, who is director, co-producer, and director of the next American Experience documentary to air on PBS on Channel 10 in Milwaukee, called The Feud. And it tells the story of the infamous feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys, a feud that, in a sense, captured the imagination of people across the country as it unfolded in mid-19th century America. Mr. McLowry, how much did you know about this famous feud before you began researching in earnest for the creation of this film?
So I was fortunate to have worked on, as I mentioned, this film about the history of West Virginia, which included the feud as part of it. So I was familiar with, the basic story and the characters of the feud. And but really, I needed to start from ground zero again and, you know, really read as many books as we could on the subject. And also to really start to and to get into the archives and looking at documents related to the story, whether they might be court documents or newspapers, those kinds of things, as well as looking for visual imagery and trying to find photographs both of characters, but also photographs that would represent the area and the people and the communities and the environment that the story took place. It was trying to be able to visualize and set the stage for the story. So, I mean, it's a very intensive and extensive process of researching, and we're really trying to absorb as much material as we can about the story from, you know, those that have investigated themselves and done books on it, or whether we might watch other, you know, watch other films or other things that might have, you know, had that as part of the story that they were telling, and to really figure out then with all this material what story we wanted to tell and what we could tell in for this program, you know, an hour-long show, which is about 52 minutes, and you start looking at trying to find out, and you talk to people that know are experts in the field, and talk to people that, for us, trying to find individuals that were, you know, descendants of the family. So we was really trying to spread a wide net to gain as much information as possible and then really try to find, you know, the through line that we were going to use to tell the story. And, you know, it's difficult. You end up leaving, you know, you have to sort of be very, sometimes called the art of omission. It's like you can't say everything, so you have to really find, you know, what things are going to, you know, carry the story forward and what contextual things you need to tell the audience to help them understand it better. And so that's the real sort of juggle that we do in trying to present these stories and then also figuring out how we can visualize something that may not have as much visual material that one might hope. I mean, certainly motion pictures was not invented at that time. So, you know, anything that we would find that might be representative of that would also be a little bit out of time, but there still was not a lot of things that would have been able to help tell that story with a, you know, early motion films.
Right. So it's distant enough in our past that certain resources are not available because they never existed at the time. Another difficulty that you faced is because this was something that, in a sense, caught the imagination of Americans everywhere, and because it was something that was not necessarily covered with full accuracy, and because by its very nature it's the kind of thing around which all kinds of legend springs up. That presents another challenge for you, I should think, to sift through all of that in order to try to find out exactly what happened, exactly what this feud was, and who did what to whom, when. I mean, that's not a simple matter, I should think, at all.
No, that actually it was quite difficult, and it really took a lot of careful examination of the materials that we could find. And you're exactly right. This is a story that has, you know, basically been handed down. Most of the newspaper accounts of the feud happen and are describing events that would have happened potentially, you know, somewhere around 5 to 8 years earlier, and something's even earlier. So that sources for that information is reliant upon the journalist talking to somebody and hearing their story. And so a lot of the storytelling and a lot of the information that has been handed down doesn't always line up between who's telling the stories. So there is that sort of like, you know, is there a way to sort of try to find things that seem to be repeated or sort of seems to be something that it has a commonality to it, that you feel like this is something that probably has a better chance of being something that may have happened. But I mean, you know, the things we tried to lean on as much as possible, when we could, is when there were actually court records that may have said something about some events that happened. And when there was testimony, sometimes the testimony about certain things was later on as well. And the media that was coming out at the time, and this is, you know, when the sort of the main event, or the, sort of the event that really kind of ignited the feud, sort of sensationalism around the feud, which was in 1888, you know, that was kind of the beginning stage of moving into what we call yellow journalism, where, you know, it was, it wasn't so important, wasn't necessarily getting the facts right, but it was telling this kind of entertaining and sort of engaging story. And I think the stories and the reporting that comes out of that, you know, has a quality of that. And so you have to sort of, you know, what can be to be sometimes a little suspect of some of that information. And then certainly as we start getting into things like more of how it gets translated into popular culture through early novels or books and then silent films, you know, everything it then gets distilled and gets the stereotypes, I think, get heightened as you get further away from the actual story and you actually get it translated into many different mediums.
We're speaking with Randall McLowry about his film, The Feud. I think it's important for you to just set out for our listeners the basics about these two families, the Hatfields and the McCoys, two families who lived pretty much in the very same place in the midst of the Appalachian Mountains, and yet two families whose fortunes were very, very different. And that is at least part of why this violent feud ultimately erupted between them. Give our listeners just a bit of background on who the Hatfields and the McCoys were.
Sure. So the Hatfield and McCoy feud took place in an area which is referred to as the Tug River Valley. And the Tug River is a tributary of the Ohio River that is currently the border between West Virginia and Kentucky. And at the time, prior to the Civil War, it was Virginia and Kentucky. And this is a very remote, rugged region. And you had, you know, the early settlers were coming in the early 1800s. And the Hatfields and McCoys were among the early white settlers in the valley. And they lived an agrarian life, a subsistence life. And this community was, you know, a harmonious community, and it was, while they were, living, there were families that were near each other. You know, you're still in a time period where things are not so immediate, so that it wasn't as if your neighbor was somebody who was, you know, in spitting distance, but it was, you know, miles away and things like that. But it wasn't a community that was sort of defined by geography, and both the Hatfields, McCoys, and other families, you know, their as I said, was just an agrarian life, and they had large families. And the feud that transpired actually happens between, you know, a faction of the Hatfield family and a faction of the McCoy family. So it's, you know, we try not to sort of, you know, paint it this, it's this every McCoy and every Hatfield had a grudge against each other situation. But you did have a situation where Devilance Hatfield, who was the patriarch of the Hatfield faction, you know, was somebody who had a name, became more known in the community after the Civil War. He was part of a guerrilla group in the area that was, I can step back a little bit. I mean, the Civil War was a great, created a great schism out through the country, but also it created a great schism in this region. And this was a borderland area. So you had Virginia on one side, Kentucky on the other. And while that was not a specific dividing line between the Union and the Confederacy, Virginia, you know, obviously seceded to join the Confederacy, and many people in the area also joined the Confederacy. Kentucky later joined, sided with the Union. And even within the family, between the Hatfields and McCoys, within families there was divisions, and then between those families there were some divisions. So it, the Civil War greatly disrupted the harmony of the Valley, and it's after the Civil War that elements of the feud start, or events related to the feud start happening. And but in essence, you know, the feud does come about due to the fact that there is the Hatfield and Devilance Hatfield has become elevated within the community by starting his own timber company. He, you know, I think sort of timber had always been a little bit part of that, the economy of this community. They would, if you had trees, you would float them down the river and get them to the Ohio River, and it was part of that sort of subsistence life. And he was looking, and there was a need at that time after the Civil War for greater resources, natural resources, timber being one of them, not only for building homes, but it was also used as fuel for railroads and for home furnaces. And he is able to get himself situated in a way that he's able to start a timber company that becomes successful. And Randolph McCoy is, he and his family had less, were unlucky in many ways about that. His father had tried to do some timbering and had not been successful. And so I think that there were some animosity and jealousies that were there that then get, lead to some events that happened that lead to, that become the legend of the feud. I mean, if you want to go into the specific stuff, I can. I don't know how much you want to go into details right now, or how much further you want me to sort of set up the story.
Right. No, I think that's a, that gives our listeners a good sense of the basic context, and probably most of the specifics of what unfolds from there is best experienced in the film itself. I want to say that one of the things that surprised me most going into the film, or I mean, I should say as I watched the film, what came as a surprise to me was this whole notion that industrialization was going to be such an important part of this story. Because, again, for those of us who kind of carelessly and inaccurately regard this part of our country, I tend to think of it as a part of the country in which industrialization would have played no role whatsoever. I mean, you just kind of think of it as a place where that's not what that part of the country was ever about. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, industrialization was incredibly important, and it was also a potent sort of intrusion onto the very landscape of that part of the country. Explain to our listeners a little more about why that part of our history, this chapter we think of as industrialization in its early days, was such a crucial element in this story.
Yes, I mean, I think in terms of thinking about this story thematically, I mean, really, this is it is a story about industrialization and capitalism really impacted this area, you know, and that's kind of for us what the angle that we're trying to look at. And you know, coming out of the Civil War, America was changing rapidly. It was becoming more of an urban country, less of a rural country. The railroad greatly transformed the country, almost, you know, connected the country with the Transcontinental Railroad. And you had factories that were, you know, steel factories and a whole sense of industrialization that happened more in the urban areas. But the what made it run was the natural resources that were coming out of places, particularly like Central Appalachia. And coal was, you know, hugely important for it was the engine of industrialization that was happening. And this is and Central Appalachia being an area that was so had such a wealth of natural resources, it really became an area that investors and industrialists and capitalists were eyeing and looking to get into it. And the railroad was the in essence what was going to enable these more remote places to be accessed. So until a railroad could really get into the Tug River Valley, you know, it couldn't fully be. It was just too difficult to just sort of take coal out of the hillside and put it on a barge and taking it down the river or the ways you needed the ways to get it out. And similarly with railroad with timber. So this area was hugely important to the American progress, and it was seen. And industrialization was seen as progress. It was seen as sort of the way America success in America was going to be through this. And so you had people that were living in this area that were living, you know, a very different lifestyle, much more, you know, traditional agrarian agricultural life. And you had people coming in from the outside that were looking to, that wanted that land. And you mentioned the word displacement, and that very is exactly what started happening to the people that were living in the area, whether it was their land, people coming in to buy out their land, you know, in total, or coming in and buying out mineral rights. And I think the people that were living on the land, who also at the time, I think that one thing that you know, is important to also point out is that the sort of sustainability of the agrarian economy for these individuals in the area was actually also kind of reaching a tipping point. I mean, they had large families, and they would hand the land down to sons within their families, and there's only so much tillable land in these very steep hollows and valleys and so on to work. And so they were actually also kind of running out of room to continually for that economic model to continue working. So there was potential opportunities that were coming with the industrialization, but in essence, you know, these large forces from the outside were able to really overwhelm, you know, when they come in and they would buy out the mineral rights, in essence, they had the right to do anything to that land. It wasn't just as if these you know, farmers would be able to continue farming and somebody else was digging out the stuff underneath the land and making money. And you know, they were not paid a reasonable amount of money for what was the value of the minerals underneath their land. And so you had people that very quickly, within a generation, were having to shift their lives, and whether that meant either leaving the area or, you know, as coal mining and timbering became more part of the economy there, you had coal towns that were popping up all over. You know, these individuals either would have to start working in the coal mine. So a life of independence was greatly shifted to what was seen as more industrial life. And what I think is interesting is that it was seen as, you know, that these people were seen as basically being obstacles to progress. And so they were being painted as being uncivilized, and the way to civilize them was to bring in things like a railroad and industrialization, and that would not only be a benefit for the country as a whole, but would be a benefit for these people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think in that, you know, in many cases, that was not a benefit for the people right in the area.
One of the most poignant moments in the film, I think, is when you spell out the specifics by which many people in this region would actually sell their land in a way that they often did not fully understand because they had not understood some of what was in literally the fine print of these agreements. Explain to our listeners what I'm talking about. It's really, in many respects, a shameful part of this story.
Well, you know, there's what you're referring to is, in essence, a contract that is created between, you know, an outside investor with the owner of the land for their mineral rights, something called a broad form deed that basically granted the rights to all the natural resources in the land, on, it has this long litany of sort of like in, on, under the land. And basically it, you know, which to some degree you could be, the farmers and the mountaineers living there felt that they could, you know, remain there and live their lives as they had been in the past. But in fact, you know, really what they didn't understand was what it meant to, you know, really extract the coal or the timber. And what it said in these documents is that it allowed these companies to do whatever they needed to do to get those minerals out. And that could mean, you know, putting in roads and basically, you know, cutting down all the trees to get to other things. And basically they could do whatever they wanted to the land itself to exploit those resources. And so it wasn't as if they were undisturbed in their livelihood by letting somebody else also share in, you know, that the acreage, so to speak, but not the surface acreage.
It's just, one just shudders to think about what it would be like to be one of those Appalachian families living through this. I mean, not understanding at all the way in which almost every aspect of their daily lives would be dramatically and probably in many cases painfully and unpleasantly impacted by all of this in ways that they would not have anticipated.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to sort of put oneself into the past and just into one's own, somebody else's emotions and sensibilities. But, you know, I think that not everybody was necessarily blind to all of this. I think that I think some did see it as a potential opportunity to get some cash to do some things. And there's, you know, whether it was potentially even having, you know, getting some of their offspring to actually go off and do other things. But no, I think it was definitely a very disruptive process. And it was something that I think beyond that also was, you know, what was happening in terms of sort of the broad brushstroke, you know, painting these people and stereotyping these people and that being part of this process. And so that I think that there's this adds to sort of the sense of them. It's not just that they're otherized and marginalized, and that allows it to be more acceptable to do this and to come in and to take their land, because in some ways they're not deserving of it, because they're not, you know, being part of this progress that is what is now part of the, you know, sort of the American march forward. And in some ways it's similar, the displacement with the Native Americans, in terms of how that the, you know, the way that they were depicted as not understanding and utilizing nature in the way that it should be used, and therefore you have the rights to sort of dispossess them and displace them. I think there was aspects of that that was happening as part of that, you know, in terms of that process. And this huge sort of falls into this story is as, you know, a moment when there's this real shift for in how the people of Appalachia are being viewed. And it is a very two-dimensional presentation of these people, and they're seen as backwards and as violent and uncivilized. And, you know, as, you know, one of the quotes we talk about, you know, in that, in terms of talking about the outsiders coming in and looking at that, it's, you know, it's all it's going to do is going to take a railroad to come in and to civilize these people. Mm. And, you know, that was kind of the sensibility at the time.
Mm. We're speaking with Ren. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the idea in the quote is that you need the railroad to come through to drive out this outlaw class. And so there was that sense that this transformation would be a positive thing.
Right. We're speaking with Randall McLowry about his American Experience documentary film, The Feud. As this feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys plays out against this turbulent backdrop that we have just been describing, as this feud becomes ever more violent and, in a sense, dramatic, it really attracts a fair amount of media attention. I would love to have you kind of characterize, and you've already kind of touched on this briefly, what that media attention was like. and what was going on there in terms of why so much of the country became so enraptured, so caught up in this feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys.
So there was, at the time that when the Hatfield-McCoy feud really exploded on the scene, there had been, you know, it wasn't the only piece of, wasn't the only thing being reported on in relationship to that area. There was, it had been reported, you know, looking at the Appalachian and mountain culture had been part of some literature called local color literature, and also as we were getting closer to when in the 1880s, when there was some violence and some other things being described as feuds happening in eastern Kentucky and Appalachia. I think with the Hatfield-McCoy feud, you have an event happen that's very dramatic, and it really hits the it makes a big splash across the country. And that's when you actually start getting some reporters coming down to from out. I mean, much of the reporting at that time had been maybe a little more regional, whether it was Louisville Courier Press from Cincinnati or Pittsburgh. And you had some reporters coming down from New York to actually, and it got the story out even further. And, you know, what they did do, you know, they were reporting, they were talking to people, interviewing people, and telling a bigger story. They weren't just reporting on that event. And I think to some degree, I mean, the feud itself had a lot of elements of great drama. It kind of fit into sort of this bigger, you know, notion, whether it's, you know, looking at a feud and looking at these two warring families. And you had, I mean, we don't talk about it in our documentary, but there was a love interest that was, it was described as part of it. And so you had sort of that Romeo and Juliet aspect of it. So this feud itself seemed to be something that was apolitical. Some of the other feuds that we've been reporting on seemed to have a little more political connections to some of the violence that was happening. And so it seemed to be this, and there was this real fascination, I think, not only about the violence, but also to the people in the cities where there was, contextually, we don't get into in the film that much, but there's a changing sense of how, you know, a family and understanding the family in America at that time, and sort of the breakdown of the traditional family that was happening in urban areas. And there's just looking at this other family that has, you know, it's so passionate that they go to such great extremes to sort of, and to such violence to sort of to defend themselves. And so there's these ideas that are put upon the story that sort of fit into a dramatic and sort of a, that fed into what the audience was interested in at the time. And so, you know, we do mention that, you know that the Cincinnati Inquirer, you had the Double Ann Hatfield on the front page along with Jack the Ripper. So it kind of fits into sort of this bigger hype, sensationalist kind of storytelling that was part of the news machine at the time, and they sort of get swept up into that, and it really does spread across the country. So there were people; it was a media sensation, and that led to, I think in 1889 was the first book, which was basically a three-part article that had been written by this one New York reporter, was put out in book form called An America Vendetta, and it had some illustrations with it as well. And so you had this added sort of first kind of trying to visualize these people, and it kind of that created in some ways sort of the very typical hillbilly image, the long-bearded mountaineer, kind of a floppy hat and always with a rifle, so that it becomes sort of very much part of, you know, the popular culture even at that time, and it gets consumed in that way. And, you know, the Hatfield, especially more so the Hatfields than the McCoys, but Devil Ann Hatfield, I think, was savvy to some degree about media. And some of the photos that we used in the film of the Hatfield families that are very posed, or but, you know, they're all with their guns, and it's like it was put on a it was asking, we're trying to visualize what the vision is and had been created about who these people are. And so you present them all, you know, with their guns and their pistols and their rifles and stuff. And so I think there's that aspect of that, you're creating an image through this, and so that some of these photos are taken, you know, after the feud is over with, but they're still wanting to create that image. And we tried to sort of look at that in an interesting way with where we actually had a photograph that was used as the basis for a postcard that was created at that time. And the title for the postcard is, typical mountaineer family. And you have this family and they've got their guns sitting in front of, on the steps of the log cabin. And so you've created, it is disseminating on many levels an image of this area and this people. In that respect, that is the environment in terms of the media environment that was happening at that time and was shaping how the story of Hatfield McCoys, even started in the media, and then it stayed popular deep into the 20th century.
Right. Well, you mentioned the book An American Vendetta, and I was struck by the subtitle of that book, A Story of Barbarism in the United States. And what that subtitle essentially says is the people involved in this feud were barbarians, which of course is going much too far. That being said, there are points in this film in which you fairly graphically describe this feud at its most violent. That is, those points in time when this feud became particularly brutal. And in a sense, as I finished the film, I found myself kind of wrestling with those two truths that on the one hand, one can understand how unjust it is to label these people as barbarians, and yet there is also this unmistakable reality that much of what actually happened in this feud was in some ways barbaric. I suspect that was something you had to wrestle with too, as the person who created this film and wanted to tell this story truthfully.
Well, that is definitely a real tension that we dealt with, and I think it's a tension in the film. There were some very violent acts that happened, and some of them were perhaps enhanced by some of the things that were happening contextually around it, but some things were, you had two families and, a brother of Devil Lance is killed, and then he seeks retribution outside the law, and ends up killing several of the sons of Randolph McCoy, and that's kind of sort of the first big violent act that happens. And then there's one that happens about 5 or 6 years later that one can argue in terms of how that was shaped. It was something that was there was lots of other things around that violent act, but definitely These were very barbaric acts. These were very violent acts. What I think that I hope we also try to convey, and it's difficult to do all this stuff in a short period of time, is that it's how the violence was also being presented. I think that you have what were being disseminated. Violence was certainly not relegated just to that area of the country at that time in America. There was a lot of violence going on across the country. Out west, there was a lot of violence, and that violence in some ways got more romanticized. You didn't have necessarily as much of the sort of turning the people into almost less than human in terms of when you start looking at them, trying to represent them. So I think the idea that you're making this, them being presented as savages, is a different situation than some of the things that were going on in terms of even some of the elevating or romanticizing of certain violence that was happening in America at the time. And then just in terms of general other violence, you certainly had great violence happening against Native Americans and against African Americans throughout this time period. So I think that, it's also sort of not wanting to not sort of just distill down this violence to it doesn't happen, it's not in a vacuum. It doesn't in any way dismiss that violence, but I think what we were also trying to try to parse and look at was that, yes, there were violence that happened between two families, and there were interpersonal situations that led to animosities, and that's part of the story, but how that smaller story got expanded and presented is, I think, worth looking at and worth trying to understand. I mean, I do think that, you know, one of our interviewees says at the beginning of the story that needing to understand that sometimes the people telling the story about violence have as much of an agenda as the people who are acting out the violence in the first place. And I think that, I mean, hopefully we're trying to uncover some of that and understanding how violence is being presented in America.
Very, very well put. I want to give you a brief moment to mention what I think is a noteworthy name that we see among those whom you speak to in this film. It's mostly historians and authors of one kind or another who are acquainted with this story. But one of the people we hear from in your film is one Kimberly McCoy, a descendant of those McCoys who were part of this feud. Can you just say a word about her inclusion in this film? It's kind of remarkable to have her here.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, we definitely wanted to try to, we did talk to quite a few people that there are a lot of descendants still, obviously still around. And they have a lot of them do have some connections, to the story and, you know, have stories themselves from having been passed down. I mean, you came to somebody who actually, she has the last name McCoy. She is actually a Hatfield, which is hard to sort of, unless we went into it, would be hard to go through, but she is actually a descendant of one of Devil Lance's brothers, but she's married to a McCoy who's a descendant of one of Randolph McCoy's brothers. So I thought there's probably something could have been made with that, I suppose, in the film, but it would be hard to do that in the historical context. But she's also become very immersed in helping to keep the story alive. And, you know, so I think that she lives in the area. She grew up in the area. So she, you know, she lives just across the river. She's born in the Matewan area, lives across the river in Kentucky now, in Macar, Kentucky. And she's also very involved with some of the efforts to keep that story alive in the area. And so I thought it was important to have a voice from, you know, somebody who has a connection to the story. And I think that she was able to, you know, provide, you know, insights into the area, into the people, and also into the story, and feel like it wasn't trying to establish a, you know, the interviewees weren't also necessarily trying to act out, you know, the two sides of the story. And there was, I mean, several other people we do interview that are not necessarily related to the McCoy, Hatfield McCoy feud directly, are actually people from Appalachia. So the several historians are from the area. Chuck Keeney is one of them. And then Bill Richardson, who is an expert on the feud, is studied it quite a lot and is from the area. So, and Bob Hutton, Robert Hutton as well. So I thought, you know, I think that they also, whether you know it or not, I think they have, you know, a connection to the area and to that story that I think also helps with their, I think, passion for what they're discussing.
Mm. Well, they are a valuable inclusion to this really remarkable film, which again is titled The Feud, and it airs next week on PBS stations across the country, including Channel 10 in Milwaukee, as part of the PBS series American Experience. And the writer, director, and co-producer of the film, Randall McLowry. Randall McLowry, thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show, and congratulations on an excellent film.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I enjoyed our conversation.
Monday on The Morning Show, we're going to be talking about a powerful theatrical presentation happening at Carthage College on Tuesday evening, a one-woman show called Intrusion that explores various facets of the nightmare of sexual violence. We'll be talking with Associate Professor Ellen Hauser from the Gender Studies Program at Carthage. It is under their auspices that this presentation is being made on Tuesday night at Carthage's Wartburg Auditorium, and we will talk with the very gifted actress who has put this show together. That's on Monday's Morning Show. We remind you that The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org, and The Morning Show is now available as a podcast on all of the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast. Make sure that you look for the title, The Morning Show with...